All right.
The Evan Bray Show. The Round Table of Justice.
Thanks so much for joining us today. Monday at 10 o'clock means the Round Table of Justice, which is 1 hour every week where we break down a topic of discussion. It could be a variety of different things. Through the last couple of years, we have had so many different guests on the program. Some of them have been police officers. Some of them work with frontline agencies, some lawyers, some judges. I've mentioned before, we've had criminologists on. The professionals that join us on the Roundtable of Justice always have a front row seat or sleeves rolled up, hands in the business of whatever we are talking about. And so that perspective is valuable. So as we were putting together what we were going to talk about this week, we were, you know, caught by the fact that over the last few weeks, we have been talking at an increased pace about homelessness. It's come up in Saskatoon. It's come up in Regina. And it is coming up in day-to-day conversation with so many people. And inevitably, when someone is talking about the homeless issue, they will instantly start talking about addiction and drugs. And I know that the fact is that not everyone who finds themselves homeless is suffering with an addiction. There are a lot of people that find themselves homeless for a variety of different issues. Sometimes, yes, they cross over and sometimes they don't. But on the issue of drugs and how we can help, because many people are saying, okay, look, if we could help the people that have a drug issue that are homeless, if we can take care of the drug issue, then perhaps the homeless issue will take care of itself, or it would be easier to help them with. These wicked problems, as they've been described by many people, are very complicated. And there are a number of people in our province, in our world, that attempt to provide help to people who suffer from one, if not many, of these social issues. The two guests that we have on the show today were guests on this show, on the Roundtable of Justice, on the very first time we ever did it. November 29th of 2023, I had Sarah Kosciusko and Rand Teed on the Roundtable of Justice. And here we are, roughly 2 years later, maybe not quite, just shy of 2 years later. And the topic is as present, as current, as problematic, as some would say unsolvable as ever. And so I'm very happy to bring these two guests back to the program. Sarah Kosciusko is a pharmacist and the operator of Queen City Wellness Pharmacy in Regina. We've had Sarah on our program before, and we welcome Sarah back today. Sarah, thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for having me.
And Rand Teed, who has been on our program a couple of times, so many people in the province know Rand. He has been doing this work for, I don't want to age him, but I will say decades. An addiction counselor, a prevention specialist, an author. We'll talk about his upcoming book momentarily. Rand Teed joins us by phone as well. Rand, thank you for taking the call.
Oh, I'm always happy to participate in this. And hi, Sarah.
Hi, Rand.
Good to have you both here. So I started off talking about people will quite often lump drugs and homelessness together. Sarah, at your pharmacy, Queen City Wellness Pharmacy, you deal with these issues every day. How closely are they tied?
Well, I think that you have people with substance dependency in all walks of life, but I can tell you that it is a lot harder to try to move into any sort of recovery when you're homeless. You know, when you're having to use drugs to either stay up all night to keep yourself safe or to numb your brain from the fact that you've been outside in the rain the last few days where there's nowhere to go, it's a lot harder to be in a recovery journey from that space than it is from people that have a home to go to.
Rand, you have been in this space. I'll let you decide if you want to say how many years. I've said decades. But how have you seen it change? The work that you do, the people you work with as an addiction counselor, as a prevention specialist, how has the drug issue changed?
Well, you're right. It has been decades, and we don't need to get into numbers. in lots of ways, I mean, the underlying problem hasn't really changed. There's a significant increase in people who are on that extreme end of suffering as a result of either mental health issues, violence issues, substance issues, and sometimes they're all really intertwined with each other. And I've said for a long time that mental health issues and addiction issues walk hand in hand, like two unarmed lovers. Very, very often, they feed each other and complicate each other. So I think we are seeing things worsen for a whole bunch of reasons.
So do we see paths forward to help people? Do we see them easier if the drug issue is kind of the primary issue that we're dealing with? Many people will say, Rand, you and I've talked about this. It's a medical issue. Some people say it's a behavioral issue. You've talked about mental health. If there isn't a complex system of social challenges, if it is, and I don't want to understate it, but if it is the addiction issue that needs to be dealt with, is that easier, and does that make a path to recovery that much more plausible?
Well, I have said for a long time that addiction takes away our capacity to choose. So when somebody has a chronic substance dependency, that drives their behavior and motivation for almost everything. So whatever processes we put in place to try and reduce the driving force of that substance dependency, I think opens up avenues for other opportunities to help people. I had a really interesting discussion last week with Rob Tange, who's one of the national leaders on trying to help change things. And what we were talking about was what can you treat first? Can you treat the mental health issue first? Can you treat the substance issue first? And for some people, getting help for the mental health issue is an easier door for them to go through than the substance issue. But getting some help for the mental health problem can increase their motivation to look at, okay, maybe I also need to get some help for the substance issue. And I've also seen people who have gone into treatment programs with significant levels of mental health problems, and those minimize very quickly when you get the substance use out of the way. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's not a simple solution for this, but substance use makes it more difficult to get the help we need, I think.
Rand Teed, addiction counselor, prevention specialist. Go ahead, Sarah.
I think, though, that if you are, you can't expect somebody to, be on a recovery journey in the same situation that they were using their substances in. So for, a lot of people I see day to day, there's very little chance that they're going to be able to do anything with sobriety if they don't have their base level needs met. So we look at like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and if we're looking at the base levels, which are like physiological safety and hunger and like just being safe, meaning like you've got housing, you've got somewhere to be that's safe. If you don't have those things met, then you can't reach the higher levels, which are like self-actualization and the places where you can see recovery and growth. Mm-hmm. So for the people that I deal with day to day, I don't think you can talk about sobriety or recovery in a place where they were using in the first place. And one of the reasons I think a lot of people do well when they're in treatment is because they don't have to worry about those things. People are feeding them. They're getting the medications they need. They're safe every day. Whereas as soon as they leave those situations, if they're having to run and worry about safety and hunger, then it's a lot harder to worry about their sobriety.
Sarah Kosciusko is one of my guests, pharmacist and operator of Queen City Wellness Pharmacy. Rand Teed, I've already mentioned, is also joining us. We're going to take our first break, but on the roundtable, where I want to go is a couple of places. Number one, is the situation getting worse? We're going to talk about is this situation going the wrong direction, despite the fact that we've seen a lot of money put into attempts to make a difference when it comes to addictions beds and services. So are we going in the right direction or not?
Something quick.
Sure. Yep.
Like Sarah's exactly right. Like you can't expect people to improve their situation if you put them through treatment and their only option is to go back exactly where they were before. That's not going to work. So we need to build in systems of continued care, and I think we're working on that with a recovery. I know the health department ministry has committed to building in a recovery-oriented system, which will help people move from where they are into safer environments, different housing options, stuff like that. But it takes time.
Yeah. Okay.
Sarah's right.
Yeah. So that's essentially where we're going to go. Is the situation getting worse? But we'll talk about it from a few different angles as well. Rand just mentioned this recovery oriented system of care. What does that actually mean? How do we find a way to help people stabilize in a way that they can have those basic needs met that Sarah was talking about, safety, hunger, housing, those types of things, and want a better life for themselves? And then, of course, the discussion, does mandatory treatment have a role to play in this? So we've got our full hour is ahead of us with our two guests today on the Roundtable of Justice here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
Today on the Roundtable of Justice, we are joined by Rand Teed, addiction counselor, prevention specialist, and author, and Sarah Kosciusko, who is a pharmacist and operator of Queen City Wellness Pharmacy in the city of Regina. Sarah, how long have you had the pharmacy up and running now?
I've been involved in this pharmacy for about 7 or 8 years, and I became part owner of it about a year ago.
Okay, so I often, back when I was still with the police, would talk about the sharp increase we saw 15, 2016, 2017. That's when meth really started taking hold. We've transitioned to fentanyl being a big problem as well. Would you say today it's worse than it was 2 years ago? Has it plateaued or is it getting better? Thoughts?
So I think that things got way worse during COVID. And I think that we've been kind of maintaining where it is. The good thing is it feels like we're in a hole, but we've actually come so far with regards to resources that are available. The Oak Clinic in Regina, the harm reduction clinic, is available a lot more often. We're moving forward with other initiatives. The treatment facilities that are in the city and around the city, Pine Lodge and Maxi and Edgewood, School of View out in Lumsden, we've got great programs, which is awesome. So we've come a long ways, but the problem is still there. And a big part of it is because of we don't have, really great mental health care. We don't have good proper supportive housing in place for enough people. And we got rid of pipes, publicly funded pipes, which means we have a lot more people using needles right now. And our HIV levels in this province have skyrocketed. So from a financial point of view, the getting rid of pipes has been a really unsafe move and a very financially unsound move. That has been probably the biggest change I've seen to the negative was getting rid of the pipes.
So let's talk about that, Rand. Maybe I'll come to you because harm reduction is a topic of discussion that we've had on this program many times. I know, Rand, you are a supporter of the province's move to this recovery-oriented system of care. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, you were part of some of the consulting that was done in putting it together. Harm reduction It's a fact that it plays a role in recovery. I think the criticism is that if harm reduction carries on for too long, does it become more enabling than it is a pathway to getting long-term sustainable help? Your thoughts on where we are at from a provincial perspective in the priorities of care, including harm reduction, Rand?
Well, I think harm reduction is, I also think it's very important. And I really believe that we have to meet people where they are at. So, I mean, you can't immediately tell somebody that they have to move into a recovery mindset. So harm reduction can be an incredibly valuable tool to use to develop a relationship with a person. But I agree with what you said, Evan. Leaving them there doesn't make sense to me. Like just having somebody stuck in a highly addictive pattern isn't caring for them. I think it becomes caring for their addiction, and not in a positive way. So what happened in Alberta was that they created a whole bunch of new treatment options and created systems where they were helping people move through their harm reduction process and then continue to provide help once they moved into a level of recovery that was, healthy for them. And that doesn't mean that everybody has to be sober. There's been some really interesting discussions that recovery doesn't absolutely mean abstinence. But what it does mean is that you're not exacerbating your life problems with your substance use. And so there's been a significant increase in recovery coaching in Alberta that isn't abstinence specific. And that's been really helpful for people. I know, I have one fellow who was really stuck in the marginalized addiction world for a long time, and he tried some short-term programs, like Pine Lodge is one of them, and had a brief period of success, but then, as Sarah mentioned, ended up back in that same situation. He's since gone to the St. Joseph's program in Estevan, and has been there for over a year, and has transitioned from someone who was receiving care to someone who's now working in the program. I think he's working in the diet, in the dietary end of it. Back paying rent, living in a safe, substance-free environment, and has a job as a helper in that world. Mm-hmm. So we need to create more possibilities like that.
Well, let's take another break, but I like the idea of exploring some success stories, because often it's in those stories that we can peel back and find out, okay, what worked and how do we replicate that? And then the other topic is Premier Moe has suggested that maybe involuntary treatment for certain groups of vulnerable people facing addictions and mental health struggles might be the way to go. We'll get the thoughts from our two panelists, Sarah Kosciusko and Rand Teed, on that when we come back here on the Roundtable of Justice. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
Today on the Roundtable of Justice, we are talking about essentially the drug issues in our province. Sarah Kosciusko, a pharmacist and operator of Queen City Wellness Pharmacy in Regina. Rand Teed, an addiction counselor and prevention specialist, also an author. We'll hear about his new book coming up in just a second. These two were the very first Roundtable of Justice guests that I had on this program late November 2023. And Here we are close to 2 years later. We're talking about this topic. Now, we can't say the needle hasn't moved. There's been some wins and some losses. In fact, just before we did that very first roundtable, the province had announced the two-year action plan on a new approach to homelessness, addictions, and social services. We know they committed $49.4 million over 5 years to create 500 new addiction treatment spaces, $40.2 million over a couple of years to create new supportive housing, permanent emergency shelter spaces, complex needs emergency shelter spaces. So, Sarah, is it that we are moving in the right direction, but we still have a capacity issue? We don't have enough of these spaces?
Absolutely. Like, all of the spaces are full right now. Like, everybody, every day, these people that come in that are looking for pipes and looking for needles, every time they come in, these are like on ramps into the system, I say. So when we were talking earlier about harm reduction and the place for it, harm reduction is an on ramp into the system. And the system is all these things we do to get to recovery. So they come in for a pipe or they come in for needles, and we can say to them, hey, have you thought about, do you want us to help you with an intake for treatment? Do you want us to help you get on like methadone or Suboxone? And we're having these conversations with people every day because we know them and they know it's not a judgmental place. They feel safe with us and they know that we're just trying to help them. Every single one of them almost says yes or not quite ready yet, but I would love to get into treatment. There is just not enough spaces, and there's not enough spaces for people to go afterwards to be safe for housing and for post-treatment beds, the sober living facilities, all of those things. And then if you have a relapse in treatment or in a sober living facility, and we know that substance dependency is a journey. There's going to be ups and there's downs, and there's going to be, you know, setbacks and moving forward. And, you know, sometimes it's 15 steps forward and 2 steps back. But often with the facilities that we have, if you have a setback, you're back to homelessness. That there isn't a plan in place to kind of get you back on track and keep you where you are and keep you safe. So I think that we prematurely took away some of those on-ramps into the system that we had, meaning the harm reduction. I also think that we use the word harm reduction to mean needles and pipes when harm reduction means everything from food and shelter and a hug and a meeting when you want it. And also diabetes care is harm reduction for people with diabetes. And we all practice harm reduction in all things. It just means causing less harm.
Rand, let's talk about the work that has been done on this recovery-oriented system of care, and I'm going to dovetail into that what Alberta is doing. They brought forward what will be official next year, the Compassionate Intervention Act, as part of their Alberta recovery model. And one of the things that they're going to is mandatory treatment. Our government has hinted that that is something that they're looking at as well. And I'm guessing looking to Alberta's model, as a bit of a test run or a blueprint of what it could look like here. Are we making moves from a provincial government standpoint that are leading us to better outcomes, Rand? And is forced care, mandatory treatment, involuntary care, whatever you want to call it, does it have its place in the model?
Well, I really believe we are making some good moves towards improving the system. I mean, things never go as fast as I would like them to go, but there's the new treatment center out at Lumsden that Sarah talked about, Willowview, it's now full. I think they're up to 60 people in there receiving longer-term mental health and addiction treatment. So that's a bonus. One of the things that we really need to continue to develop is what happens when people get out of treatment. That's been a downfall for years, and there's work being done on that. In terms of involuntary treatment, I think we really need to understand what that is. And it isn't a lock them up kind of process, although there certainly is people being taken maybe initially against what they wanted to do, but put into a place where they can receive First of all, medically assisted detox, so it isn't throwing them into a room and letting them suffer through a an uncomfortable and often dangerous detox process. It's a significant level of medical help going through that detox process. But then secondly, it will involve some significant level of longer-term trauma care, support, and treatment. I think we need to understand that people with chronic addiction issues have chronic trauma. Sometimes it's from the addiction, sometimes it's been a lifelong thing, sometimes it's intergenerational. But until we help people understand how to manage how they're feeling, manage their stress response to situations without using substances. And that doesn't mean that you don't include long-term opiate agonist therapy. That that's being in recovery. Being on long-term OAT therapy is really important for some people. And there are some medications that are starting to be used for long-term stimulant dependency treatment. So incorporating those kinds of things. But I think the biggest piece is understanding that when somebody is in chronic substance dependency, their brain isn't working properly. Everything is, Sarah talked about Maslow's hierarchy of human needs. Everything's on that survival plane. Like, I need this to survive. Like, I need oxygen. And so helping them transition through that and allowing their brain to stabilize and start to be able to look at, oh, I've got some other options, is compassionate care. Even though initially it wasn't entirely voluntary, it can really give a person a compassionate and empathetic opportunity to make some changes in their lives that they couldn't see before.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, I want to bring you into this conversation. You talked about we need to not limit the off-ramps, as you put it. I had the Minister of Mental Health and Addictions from Alberta on. He talked about it as being pathways to recovery. Whatever way we look at it, is involuntary treatment one pathway that we should be exploring?
I don't feel comfortable saying yes or no, and this is the reason. When our voluntary ones are already at max capacity, so who are you booting out of those ones to put involuntary people in there? And again, I really think that if we had a larger capacity, then people would volunteer if there was a pathway to appropriate housing, you know, that people would want to go there. But in the situation we have right now, like sending some, I know we're not sending people to jail and that's not what we're talking about, but if you look at when people are incarcerated and we let them out, they're going back to the exact same situation. We have people, you know, getting out of corrections and just being dropped off totally to homelessness with, not on social services, not on anything. And the fact that we're not doing a good job with that, we're putting people in a tough position to not end up back in jail. And the exact same thing is going to happen with, like, with treatment. So mm-hmm. if people leave, and like I said before, they end up back using or back in the exact same situation they're using before, then we're going to have them all of a sudden very unsafe because they're going back to that home where they weren't, where the use is happening or where the triggers for using were happening, and they go use again, and that is when people die. So until we have that off ramp of into a normal quote unquote life where people are going from treatment into a sober living facility or back home with their families, until we've fixed those things, I don't think we have any business talking about forced treatment. And the issue I have with medical detox is that I worry if we're doing all these things combined, if we're having people going into treatment because we've got lots of treatment beds and we've got lots of sober living facilities or recovery communities that people can go into afterwards, and we've got this beautiful system where people can have lives that they're choosing the outcomes in, that might be something that is worth looking at. But that is not what we have right now. We're piecemealing these things together. And unless it's all working as one big system, it doesn't work. So if we do forced detox on somebody without all these other things in place, then we're basically ripping off the bandage and having their trauma and all these reasons they were using the substances in the first place exposed, and that just causes more pain and more hurt. So unless we're doing it in a place that is all, you know, taking care of that trauma, taking care of all those things, I don't think we can be ripping off those bandages.
I'm going to jump in, and we need to take our last break, but we will be back with Sarah Kosciusko and Rand Teed wrapping up this discussion today on what needs to happen, what is missing, what do we need in this province. And Sarah, I know you've been very clear in terms of that post support care that needs to be there once people come through treatment. We'll talk a little bit about that. And I want to hear, Rand, about Collateral Damage, your new book that'll be out in the next couple of weeks, when we come back to finish up today's Roundtable of Justice here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
Finishing up our chat today on drug issues and drug treatment and what that looks like. How do we get to a focus on recovery, a pathway to probable recovery for people? Sarah Kosciusko, pharmacist and operator of Queen City Wellness Pharmacy, Rand Teed, addiction counselor and prevention specialist, both joining us. Sarah, how many people, because we hear sometimes from people saying there are people that are so deep into their addiction, they can't want a better life for themselves. How many people would you say regularly refuse help, don't want a house, don't want help, that I consider would be a candidate for mandatory treatment?
Like, I've certainly seen people that are there, and it's not necessarily that they don't want a different life. They've been in that same situation for so long that they don't know how to accept help when it's given. But this is so the minority of people, and I fear that when we talk about these things, people will talk about the two people that I know, which is like literally two people that I know that, you know, moved into amazing supportive housing facilities and ended up not going home for, you know, weeks or months at a time in the beginning because they were afraid and they didn't know what this would look like. Mm-hmm. And to them, any sort of support maybe felt a little bit like residential school or a little bit like jail or a little bit like these other things that are still tied to their triggers. So those things are not common. They're uncommon. And most of those people have come around and love the help that they got. Do I think that those would be the people that are candidates for forced detox or forced treatment? Again, there's so many people that want the treatment and want the detox that why wouldn't we go there first?
Okay, we've only got 3 minutes left. Rand, I'm going to start with you, but I'm going to ask both of you, are there models out there that we should be replicating that are working? In a minute or so, Rand, your thoughts.
Well, yes, there are. I worked in Alberta a year ago. We set up a long-term treatment program for men based on a therapeutic community model, and it's working well. Most of the people that have graduated from that have gone back into supportive housing and are back working and paying taxes and doing all of the stuff that we want people to do. The other program was a therapeutic living unit in the jail that I worked in, and it gives people high-quality addiction treatment near the end of their sentence and then ties them into significant level of support when they leave.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, very quickly. Models we should replicate?
We have them here. We just don't have enough of them. You know, Pine Lodge, Willow View are examples. If they're putting people into supportive living facilities afterwards, like Pine Lodge, they've got their post-treatment health, so that works great. There's just not enough. But there's also other models like the Friendship Center or like Phoenix Residential Society that are more of a harm reduction model that are also really successful. So we have good models right here, and we've done studies on them and shown the tax implications of doing these programs being beneficial, and the humanistic things are so beneficial. So we know that they work. We just don't have nearly enough.
Collateral Damage, the name of your new book. Rand, in the last few seconds here, when's it out? What's it about?
Well, it should be out in about a week or 10 days. It's about the impact of substance use on families, friends, and workplaces. And it's also about how the people that are affected by someone else's substance use also need help and treatment, and it offers some solutions.
Great stuff. We look forward to that. This has been a great segment. We appreciate both of you being here. Rand Teed, addiction counselor, prevention specialist, and author of the upcoming book, Collateral Damage. Rand, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Sarah Kazusko, pharmacist, operator of Queen City Wellness Pharmacy. Sarah, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
It's the Roundtable of Justice every Monday at 10 o'clock. We appreciate our guests joining us today. We take a break. When we come back, Jeff Keshen, president of the University of Regina, with an update on a couple of things we're following from the U of R next here on 650 CKOM 980 CJME.